A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse on this Memorial Day. A special version of the Greenhouse Show sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. And with us also is Brian Lloyd this morning. Marie Anton also taking your questions at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's take our next caller now. This is Dave in Bountiful. And good morning, Dave.
Good morning. I've got a couple of questions on lawn care. I've got a fern-like growth in my lawn, and I've tried Weed Be Gone. I've tried a few different types of weed killer, lawn weed killer, but nothing seems to touch it. What can I use to get rid of this fern?
Well, you've actually got a weed in there, and I would step it up to something like Speed Zone or T-Zone or some products or Weed Free Zone.
Okay, now is that your typical 2,4-D?
No, not at all. This is kind of like 2,4-D on steroids with some more additions into it. And so T-Zone has triclopyr in it. They're called, in the industry, they're called four-way weed killers. And so if you go to a Walmart or a Home Depot and just buy a standard dandelion killer, they'll have a combination of three herbicides. Well, these four-ways have an extra herbicide in there that will make them more effective, and oftentimes they have different chemistries that are more effective against hard to kill weeds. The one, your yarrow that you have in your grass, and the yarrow has a fern like look, it spreads like crazy if it gets too much water because it's very drought hardy and it's a native into our foothills, although there are cultivated types that we use in our landscapes. But Speed Zone or Weed Free Zone or T-Zone should knock it out. Now, you may need to spray this spring and again in the fall to just do some cleanup, but those types of products do a good job.
Okay, one more quick question. I've got some sort of a growth that almost looks like a miniature grapevine that tends to come up. My neighbor, I think, blessed me with this. How do I get rid of that? It's a vine, and
is it in your lawn or where is it at?
No, it's along my fence line, and then it's almost looks a little bit like grapes too, and then in some of my flower beds.
You may be seeing Boston ivy. Does it turn red in the fall?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, there's a number of different things, but the problem you're going to run into is if it's coming up from root shoots on your property, if you use a Roundup type product or another herbicide, you could damage the neighbors on his side of the property and you may be liable. That gets really sticky though, and I'm not an attorney. And so just clipping it back, hoeing it out, tilling it out may be your option, because if you resort to herbicides, it could turn out badly. You could try like a sucker stopper type product. There's several of them out there, and it's a spray that if it has roots, if you go in and clip it, it has roots, and you put the sucker stopper, apply sucker stopper to it, it shouldn't emerge from that point again from the season. That's a little hit and miss, but short of maybe talking to the neighbor to see what it is, and there's not a really good solution because you could damage the neighbor's landscape.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're all welcome.
This show.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for your call this morning. Next texter just bought a home in Provo, Ton. They have some very old-look rose bushes that face north, but they appear to have been neglected and don't have a regular water source, and they want to try to save these. They say they appear to have powder mildew, and they worry because they have free-ranging chickens, and they're concerned about store-bought fungicides harming them and the bees. So they want to know what you would suggest.
Well, if if they have really bad powdery mildew, I would get some temporary fencing, you know, even weed barrier, and put up some stakes into the ground or some T-posts or just something that's, you know, 2 or 3 feet tall that will exclude the chickens. I guess they can fly over it, but try to exclude them. And you're going to have to use a fungicide labeled to cure powdery mildew. So something with propiconazole or like an F-stop product that has that curative feature. And they need to be careful that some of them, like Daconil out there, doesn't do the job on powdery mildew. And so a rose spray, actually a rose fungicide, would probably do the job. Now, if the powdery mildew infection is very advanced, it may be that they won't be able to control it very well until next year, and they can start spraying when the roses first start to leaf out. But I think this is a situation that, as long as they follow the label and temporarily exclude the chickens, and it might even be just until that the fungicide is dry, you obviously try to avoid spraying when the roses are in bloom. So if these are old roses, that will only be for a couple of weeks out of the year. So I think that they could use a fungicide just with a little bit of caution and be fine.
When I think of mildew, I think of water, though, and they say these roses don't have a regular water source.
Yeah, and that's the Provo. Since they're in Utah County, they could email some pictures to gardenhelp@usu.edu, and those will go over to my team of crack diagnosticians, Meredith and Liz, and they both are experienced horticulturists and could quickly tell if it is powdery mildew or not.
Okay. Do they need to have a regular water source there?
They would benefit from being deep watered every couple of weeks, at least to a depth of a foot.
All right. Next caller, Angel in West Valley. Good morning, Angel. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. So I'm a baby gardener. I'm just starting out for the first time. I have a house in West Valley that I rent, so I don't want to dig up a garden. I've got plenty of room, and I also didn't want to start off with a box planter. So I'm starting off with pocket planters. I went to a local nursery.
I'm an idiot, so will you describe pocket planters to me?
Oh, yes. They're like a tiered, it's kind of like wall planting. They're tiered pockets, and it's just a string of 7 pockets. They're about 3 inches by 2 inches. So
okay. I was born in a barn, so I'm glad
stop.
To know.
Okay, stop.
I've actually run into a lot of people who've actually said that. I don't know what you're talking about, but they're made of felt. It's a felt material.
Okay.
Okay, so went to the nursery. They said, yeah, I want to plant cherry tomatoes, and I bought some Cresselia. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I've got the water beads for water source, like she recommended. My question is, do I need to put in dirt?
No. You would want to use artificial potting soil only. If you put dirt in there, it'll make the world's hardest dirt clods, and the roots won't grow out in it. And so, Brian, do you have any particular types of soil commercial mix that you would recommend?
No, she said she got the water beads. So
yeah.
Any peat-based or coconut core-based product is fine, just as long as it has good drainage.
Okay. So from what I was seeing online, it sounds like I don't even need a lot of it. I just need like a scoopful maybe?
Probably. I mean, enough to, you're going to have to accommodate the roots of the plant. And so you are going to want enough in there to have a good root mass, because what will happen, especially if these are in the sun, is that they will dry out. And you'll end up watering them 2 or 3 times a day if you don't have enough soil in there. Now, as the foliage grows and shades it a little bit, it will help. But my fear with something like that sometimes is just the sheer amount of sunlight and our dry air drying out those pockets too quickly.
Yeah, that's why they recommended the water beads. They said that will help with that.
All right. Angel, anything else we can help you with?
Nope, that's it. Thank you so
much. Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
So, Brian, pocket planting, these wall planters are becoming more popular. If someone wants to put in flowers, what are some of the flowers that might do well in this type of planting?
You know, anything that does well in the ground will do well up there, especially rock garden type plants because they like more drainage. And like Ton said, those, because of the smaller soil volume, those tend to dry out a lot faster. And And so anything that likes drainage, especially succulents, a lot of people will do wall planting with succulents. But vertical gardening is the way to go, especially when you have a limited backyard space. And you can enter a whole new dimension of gardening when you go vertical. So pocket planters or anything that's on a trellis or that goes upwards is awesome in my book. But any types of flowers will work well along with your vegetables. And I like to mix it up so it's pretty to look at the same time as it provides food for your family.
Olson's Greenhouse sponsoring the Greenhouse Show today. Brian Lloyd is with us. Brian, tell us about Olson's Greenhouse. You're a local family-owned company.
Yeah, I'm the fourth generation. My brothers and sisters and I that operate in the business, there are five of us married couples that run the business today. Our great-grandfather started the company, Roy Olson, back in the 40s. So we just celebrated our 75th anniversary, and we actually have several members of the fifth generation working for us right now.
Okay, so you've beat the odds. Don't they say that it usually the second generation doesn't follow through on a family business?
It does, and we're lucky that we love to work together, but we also are spread out enough that we have our own separate businesses to run as well. And so we have growing locations in Colorado, in Idaho, and every family member plays an important part, but a separate part. And so that's what keeps the harmony in our family business.
Todd, I know you've been out to the greenhouse here locally. Kind of describe for our listeners, what's the greenhouse?
Well, they are very specialized in what they do and very good at what they do. And so, you know, 20 years ago when I was in the greenhouse industry, it was a lot of just hand labor, lots of people. And when you go to Olson's and, you know, tour the facility and watch how they do business, they are very efficient to keep their costs down. But they even try to minimize any sprays. They're putting natural predators, you know, insect predators out to control their pests. They have the newest varieties, do lots of research on what's going to do well for our climate. I know my son is actually really good friends with Chad Olson's son. They run around together, and so I know the Olson family, and they're honest people and down to earth. And their interest is growing, you know, they employ hundreds of people and growing premium plants at a good cost.
All right, Brian, one thing I have to ask you, though, you provide plants for Home Depot, Walmart, some Costco plants as well. Mm-hmm. Something that Tana was just saying about you pay special attention to what grows well here.
Right. You know, there's two things about that. Number one is that something will perform in our yards here, so it has to be adapted to our climate. There are some flowers that are pretty that don't do well in Utah, and we've got not only the cold that we get in the winter, but the heat and dry humidity, low humidity that we get in the summer. And number two is even things that do well here, they need to be acclimated. So we grow seedlings right here in the mountain valleys of Utah. We're growing in Lehi and Samaquin and Salem. And so your flowers have already been raised in the climate that they're going to spend the rest of their lives in. And that's very important. It's important because they get high light and they get that low humidity from the start. And so we make sure that they look great for your yard.
And we are taking your calls this morning, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Thank you so much for joining us on the KSL Greenhouse on this Memorial Day, a great day for planting. Much more, your questions still to come. Thanks for being with us for the KSL Greenhouse Show, 801-575-8255, the number to call. You can text us at 57500. The show this morning is sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. So it's Maria, Ton, and Brian Lloyd from Olson's taking your questions this morning. Ton, next person is asking, what is a good fertilizer to use on their hostas?
I don't know that they really need to fertilize the hostas. They seem to do just fine. If they did need to use something, there's a few options. They could use a liquid fertilizer and just kind of give them a small dose every couple of weeks. They could use triple 16, and that's just a good general flower bed fertilizer that also can be used for lawns. Or they might even get away with just like 20-0-0. You know, you go to a garden center and there's all these fertilizers with pictures of flowers and vegetables, but the plants don't know that fertilizer was or was not made for them. You know, so
You're kidding, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's just a marketing thing. And so 1616 or 2000, but I would question why they're fertilizing the hostas. If they're brand new, I wouldn't do anything beyond a mild Miracle-Gro type liquid feed.
Okay, next question is, will serviceberry attract voles or gophers because of the berries? And is there a single trunk serviceberry you would recommend?
Well, no, they won't. The voles and gophers would more feed on the roots if they did anything. And what they will attract are birds, because the birds love the fruit. And so as far as a single stem, unfortunately, they're not fruit-bearing types. I mean, they bear fruit, but there's serviceberries that have been bred for the quality of the fruit. And so the ones that are single-trunked are going to be like Autumn Brilliance and Downy Serviceberry that will have good edible fruit on it, but that won't be as big. And so you either need to choose the single-trunked ornamental types, or you're probably going to have to order them online, find some of the fruit-bearing types and have them, you could maybe try to train them into a single or multi-trunk tree, but you're going to have to choose one or the other depending on what your goals are.
Okay, let's take our next caller. This is Scott in Morgan, and good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. What's your question?
Well, we're trying to go organic up here where we're at, and we're trying to just eliminate the weeds around the edges, and we're wondering what we could use to stay organic with our harvest and crops.
Well, that's a whole lot of time to go with everything. But as far, I mean, in just in a nutshell, as far as organics, most of the herbicides that are available are going to be what are called burn down or wilt down type herbicides that will be acetic acid, which is pretty much strong vinegar, oils and such that will chemically scorch whatever it is you're trying to go after. And they work best on annual weeds and work best as they germinate or before they bloom. So a number of these will be available from places, garden centers, or maybe even like IFA or Steve Regan, or you might even be able to, if you're big enough, to order them from Wilbur Ellis or some of these other companies. And flaming, like you can get attachments for tractors that use propane to burn. Those are always nice. I know of a few local organic farms using those, weed torches that you would normally use to burn ditches. But as far as a systemic herbicide, there are not any organic options that I know of.
Okay, okay. So not the 35% vinegar would work good enough?
Those would be fine, and they are registered organic. Now, when you do that, you know, it's the residual isn't there like maybe glyphosate would have, but there's a lot of danger in a 35 or a 50% acetic acid because it'll burn your skin. And so it isn't, you know, when you're applying glyphosate or Roundup is actually safer, much safer than acetic acid, but it's not organic. And so the acetic acid will work, but you're going to probably, depending on the formulation, be in a Tyvek bodysuit with a respirator and acid-resistant gloves to apply it because of the nature of what it is.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't realize it was that strong.
It can be. And you can get concentrations that aren't that strong and not have to wear that personal protective equipment that would require for like a 50%. But I think that with organics, a lot of it is smart farming and knowing when to apply. And sometimes your timing might be down to the day. Because one farm I know of up in Cache Valley will plant vegetable crops, and they know when they plant it and how long it'll take them to germinate. And the day before they expect germination, they go in and burn down all the weeds. And because the seeds are in the soil of the vegetable seed isn't harmed.
Okay. Well, we'll try that maybe.
Okay. And there's a lot of USU resources. We have a couple of professors that specialize in organics. There's the Urban and Small Farm Conference that oftentimes has an organic track that I'd highly recommend. And there's fact sheets being generated by USU that could be useful also for weed management and organic farming.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right.
That.
Thanks for your call this morning. Guys, next texter lives in a condo. They have planters on their porch and deck, but they need to be hand-watered, and they're going out of town, you know, for a couple of weeks. They're wondering if there's any creative way to water these, like upside-down bottles, something like that. Brian, have you heard of anything like that?
Yeah, a couple things. I would look seriously if there is a hose spigot out there on the patio. I would just go the simple route and get a timer. You can get hose end timers that run off of Bluetooth or just standard clocks that are integrated into the timer and set that up on a drip system. That's the easiest and best performing way. You can put an upside down bottle in, but it's not going to get you a couple of weeks, especially if those are full sun containers. There are also pottery. There's pottery out now by Proven Winners called AquaSave or AquaPots that actually has a reservoir of water at the bottom of the soil mix. And it will take soil up anywhere from over 1 week to 10 days, depending on how hot it gets. But we're going to be in the 90s if they live down here in the valley over the next week. And so I wouldn't do anything except water daily if you don't have it set up already on an AquaSave type system. And that the best way to do that is with drip irrigation on a timer.
All right.
And maybe even have a neighbor check on it daily or at least every few days just in case something goes wrong with that. I would hate to see somebody put a lot of money into those planters and then have them wilt away because the batteries failed or a power outage or they were using some gimmicky system. And I'm not saying what Brian mentioned. Those are a lot more reliable. But don't just go to Pinterest and find an upside-down bottle system. With the money you've invested, it's worth the extra 20 or 25 bucks, as Brian said, for a timer and things, and maybe even have a neighbor come check on them.
Great. Time for our top-of-the-hour news. This Memorial Day version of the KSL Greenhouse, sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. Brian Lloyd will be with us throughout the morning, taking your calls and questions. And 801-575-8255 is the number to call, or you can text us at 57500.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.